The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 14th of May, 2025. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you are very well indeed. And we look forward to having you on board the 9 till noon show train, the only train running in Donegal today for the next 3 hours. And we have our phone lines open for you. We've got lots coming up in the program, lots to talk about. But we always welcome your input, your comments, your issues that you raise, the good news you wish to pass on, anything that we can help you with. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. It is not a club. You can text in at any stage. If you've never texted in before, your view or what you're going through or what you want to talk about is as important as the next person's, okay? So if you've never texted us before and you have a view or an opinion or a topic, please get in touch with us. 07491 25000 is the telephone number. Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkins taking your calls today. And you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Now, we'll start with a look at the Finn Valley Voice this morning. Almost half of Ireland's road traffic fatalities this year have involved vulnerable road users. And you're being invited to have your say on Finn Valley speed limits. Run down a pedestrian at 60 kilometres per hour and there's a 50 to 90% chance that they will be killed. Run them down at 30 kilometres per hour and the risk drops to below 3%. That is the stark reality behind Donegal County Council's decision to undertake a speed limit review of all public roads in town, villages and settlements with an existing speed limit of 60 kilometres per hour or lower, and it's expected that many of those will be reduced to 30 kilometres per hour. And that consultation, it's a non-statutory consultation at this stage, actually. I meant to mention this yesterday, went live on the council's website yesterday. So if you want to go on to their website and see where off the top of my head, I think it's 110, something like that, 110, 108 settlements that were being reviewed, and there are proposals to change speed limits on circa half of those. So it could be in your area, Dunkaneely, for an example, Letterkenny Main Street. Have a look around and have your say. It's the non-statutory stage, so it's the one of the first stages, but eventually these changes will be implemented. But that's live on the council website as of today. The Irish Times this morning: promised tax cuts in the budget may have to be jettisoned if the EU fails to secure a tariff deal with the US. Minister of State for International Development Neil Richmond has warned. Speaking in advance of the launch of a new report on the state's bilateral trade with Germany, Mr. Richmond said the shock to global trade from US tariffs had left the Irish economy in a tight situation and that October's budget will be very different to its predecessors. Mr. Richmond's comments represent a growing school of thought in government that believes it would be fiscally reckless to repeat the windfall budget of recent years at a time of such economic uncertainty. And the cynic in you might suggest, well, there is no election, so why do a giveaway budget? But anyway, that is one of the concerns. But look, things happened very quick with Donald Trump. Look at the deal he struck with China very recently. They've got a 90-day pause on the worst elements of their tariff war. He's over in the UAE, Riyadh, etc., striking deals over there. So I'm sure he'll stop off in Europe at some point, and hopefully the worst of those tariffs, a negotiated agreement can be reached there. Those of you living in the Milford area have been under a hosepipe ban for a week or so now, but it could be extended. Hosepipe bans introduced in several parts of the country last week appear to have dampened local demand for water, but Ishkeran has 17 other areas in difficulty and all supplies are being closely monitored. The strain on water supplies illustrates one of the challenges that come with having good weather. While most people will be greeting the current run of clear blue skies and warm sunny days as a joy, between the high temperatures and low rainfall lies a middling anxiety. Now, there is no rain forecast for the next 10 days. That's the reality. Special appeals are being made in Donegal because of our water supply being under pressure. And they are in Letterkenny, Buncrana, Bella Buffet, Stranorlar, Carrigart and Downings. Now, whilst there is no hose pipe ban in those areas at this point, those are areas where water is potentially running low. And it goes back to that question that I put to the housing minister at the start of the week. You know, we talk about housing this, housing that, delivery this, delivery the other. I mean, how could you sanction the construction of 50 houses in Letterkenny or Buncrana or Carrigart for that matter when the water is under severe pressure after a couple of weeks of dry weather or even a dry winter? You know, the infrastructure just simply is not there. And as I said to him at that time, you know, this is going to be our greatest challenge to get people into houses. His response is, well, we're giving Uisge Éireann lots of money to invest. But, you know, when do we see the benefits of that? So just to recap, Milford already in a hosepipe ban, but special appeals are being made to residents in Letterkenny, Buncrana, Bella Buffet, Stranorlar, Carrigart and Downings in Donegal because there's severe pressure on the local water supplies there. And at least three of those places are areas that need a lot of additional stroke social housing. So it would make you wonder, wouldn't it? Especially if we continue to get dry weather. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and staying with housing to some extent. Their front page, cuts to payments for pledging accommodation for Ukrainian refugees means the state may have to pay millions more to house them in hotels, guest houses and B&Bs. Internal documents obtained by the paper show officials in the Department of Public Expenditure are concerned about the knock-on effect from cutting the monthly payment from €800 to €600 last February. In a memo prepared for Minister for Public Expenditure Jack Chambers, they warned there is a risk this could undermine ongoing efforts to reduce reliance on expensive commercial accommodation. Immigration Minister Norma Foley wrote to Mr. Chambers in February seeking to reduce the accommodation recognition payment, a cut that takes effect from June. So it's not in yet. Mr. Foley said the reduction sought to balance maintaining the scheme while minimising interference with the private rental market. That's a concern that's been expressed locally here, of course. She added, reducing the payment will facilitate winding down the scheme in an orderly way to advance or in advance of the temporary protection directive. But I think they're missing a point here in that there's lots of people already topping up and the officials are suggesting refugees pay a top up to hosts. Well, that's already happening, right? So the private rental sector is already skewed because you can offer a landlord 250, 300 quid on top of the six, and that's a tidy little package, mostly tax-free, still gives you a great advantage over someone not in receipt of the APP. I just wonder, and I'm sure there are those affected by this latest medical controversy, and maybe you are affected by this, maybe you got one of these letters I'm going to talk about, and maybe you could help us understand how it feels or what it might mean. Taoiseach Micheál Martin said there is no final timeline for when a report on potentially unnecessary hip surgeries for children will be received. He added, some of the implications are disturbing if what has been alleged turns out to be true. The Ditch previously reported unnecessary procedures had been conducted on children under the care of Children's Health Ireland. Health Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill confirmed an audit of children who had hip dysphagia surgery is being undertaken. While an audit of surgeries carried out between 2021 and 2023 is underway, letters have been sent out to parents about operations as far back as 2005. In the Dáil, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald questioned when the report would be published, as she said the party had been contacted by parents at their wit's end. So I'm just wondering if you are affected by this. Maybe you got one of the letters. Maybe you welcome the review. Maybe your child went through unimaginable pain for them at that time, and you're wondering, did they really need to go through this operation at all? There's also a suggestion that there should be regular checkups up until the age of 15 or 16. Maybe that hasn't happened with you. So it's critical, it's important, and what it does is it throws out uncertainty. So whether your child is or isn't affected, if you got one of these letters or you think you are affected, you're going to be anxious, aren't you? 086 60 25,000, if you can give us an insight from your own perspective into that. I would hope no one listening has gone through that. I hope you understand that. But if you have, and maybe you want to share your story, 07491 25,000 is a number that you can call as well. And talking of raising our little bundles of joy, it's costing more and more and more. The cost of raising a child from the cradle to college has jumped by 60% in the last decade, costing parents an extra $65,000. A new survey found that the cost was €105,000 in 2015, but has now reached a staggering €169,000. Food, college fees and rent support account for the biggest outlays and add up to $15,000 a year. A mum of two, Kel Gallivan, who is a financial expert and money coach, said the new figures from Health Insurer Layer Life Care Life's Cradle to College Cost Index highlight the evolving financial landscape for Irish families. €170,000 from birth to if they go on to third level. Lastly, the Gerry Adams trial is ongoing. It's not his trial, of course. He's taking an action against the BBC. It's reported in The Sun and other papers this morning. A source who told the BBC that Gerry Adams sanctioned a murder would likely be killed if identified, a court heard. Spotlight reporter Jennifer O'Leary made the claim at the High Court yesterday. She said at least two other sources told her the Provisional IRA were behind the murder of MI5 agent Dennis Donaldson and not dissident Republicans. As you would know, the former Sinn Féin leader, Gerry Adams, is suing the BBC for defamation. He claims the 2016 Spotlight documentary defamed him by falsely accusing him of sanctioning the 2006 killing of Mr. Donaldson in Glenties. The BBC denies it defamed Mr. Adams, who insists he had no involvement in Mr. Donaldson's death, which dissident Republicans claimed responsibility for in 2009. But explaining how the doc came about, Ms. O'Leary said she met a well-placed Republican source in late 2015 who said the provos were actually behind the murder. And the BBC journalist said a security source was later met repeating the claim. Ms. O'Leary said she first met Martin, the anonymous source who claimed in the doc that Mr. Adams okayed the murder in February of 2016. But the reporter said she was constrained in the detail she could share about Martin. She said it's rare to have a source where if his identity is revealed, it is likely he will be killed. Ms. O'Leary denied claims she had animus towards Mr. Adams, insisting, "I didn't have any agenda against Gerry Adams." And it continues. It's funny, they say two. I think I saw a report in another paper that said she had said that she had 15 up to five additional sources in relation to that. Okay, that continues. We'll keep you updated with it as it ticks along. Now, we've mentioned a couple of times this week on Garda Síochána, they were due to hold their Go Purple Day on Friday. It's a very important day and it will take place further down the line. It was to help raise awareness of domestic abuse. And as I say, it will be rescheduled, but it has been deferred, and quite understandably. It's as a mark of respect to the late Garda, Kevin Flatley, and his funeral is actually scheduled now to take place on Friday. So Garda have deferred the Go Purple Day. So the coffee mornings and what have you that planned are off at the moment. But as I say, we'll keep you updated as to when that's rescheduled. Now, on programmes like this, and even perhaps specifically this programme, we talked all the time about broadband, lack of broadband. There's not enough broadband, the national broadband scheme, when broadband is coming to my area. And I, the calls and texts tapered off to some extent. And I think that's because to a great extent, a lot of people did get access to high speed broadband, but that doesn't mean everyone has. And it can be really quite impactful on how you go about your day-to-day business, be it, you know, domestic business or work business. A man with an insight into this, I think, is Oliver McBride, who is managing editor of The Fishing Daily. Good morning to you, Oliver.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Your experience in terms of, you know, access to decent broadband is not good.
It's not good, at really, no. For the past couple of years, I've been here in the Aris Centre in Downings, people would know it as the Meaver Resource Centre. And, you know, we don't have high-speed broadband here in the building. Yet and all, if you look across the streets, a couple of months back, they were installing high-speed broadband in holiday homes and Airbnbs. So it is a little bit ironical to be actually a business in a centre where you think would have been high priority for high-speed broadband.
Is it about you hooking into it and a delay in that regard, or is proper high-speed broadband not available close to the business?
Well, what I was told was that the building was regarded as having high enough broadband speeds when the survey was done by the National Broadband Plan. And the building was excluded, yet now there's high-speed broadband cables running outside the front door.
Yeah, and we often talk about download speeds, but with a business like yours, it's upload speeds that are important, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah, because we're uploading news and podcasts and different things. So, for example, you'd wait maybe 30 seconds for something to upload, whereas if you were on proper high-speed broadband, it would upload in maybe like 5-10 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's continually every day you're just losing ground and losing ground and losing ground. And then if you want to upload something larger, like a podcast, you know, generally in the wintertime, you're talking about maybe 40, 45 minutes, where you could do it maybe 10 minutes with high-speed broadband. And then all of a sudden then summer comes along and you're back to ground zero where you don't have any broadband at all because there's so many holidaymakers in the area.
Yeah, the content ratio is designed for winter months, not the summer, clearly.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be, yeah. Okay.
And then, of course, you know, if you decide to drive to Letterkenny and go over Loch Salt, there's, you know, broadband interfaces on poles all up that road, if you know what I mean, and a handful of houses. Like, it's kind of weird, isn't it, to look on? So in terms of the resolution to this, do you need whomever's responsible for the broadband to relook at this and tap you into the broadband that's clearly there? What do you see as the solution, Oliver, that gets you out of this mess?
Well, yeah, we definitely need broadband here as quick as possible. Like, you know, it's summertime's coming. It's going to be a case of 2 o'clock comes in the afternoon and you're finished for your day because you can't do any more work. But also, like, we're looking at the situation where the question has to be asked, who made the decision not to have or allow broadband into such a centre? As you know yourself, this is quite a large building. And what the speeds are downstairs is going to be different to what the speeds are upstairs because, you know, it has to go through the network. So the question has to be asked, who made a decision? Why didn't the National Broadband Plan decide to exclude certain buildings, and especially community buildings?
And just to be clear, is it definitely the National Broadband Plan? Because we do know that AIR took over quite a few chunks of the National Broadband Plan's original schedule, if you know what I mean. So is it AIR that did Downings, or was it the National Broadband Plan, I wonder?
Well, when I inquired about it, the answer I got was that the building was excluded. I wasn't told at the time who.
Okay. Right, well, we can inquire in relation to that. It's crazy stuff. And just remind people where the building is.
It's basically in more or less in the middle of Downings between Casey's Caravan Park and the Downings Bay Hotel.
Yeah.
So it's in the town.
You know, the cables run past your front door.
Cables run past the front door, yeah. Mm. And everybody else seems to be getting it. And we're sitting here like in the dark ages.
Yeah, I do feel bad. I feel guilty because I'm getting 1,000 down and 500 up just up the road from you.
Yeah.
If you ever need to upload something, Oliver. look, leave it with us. It doesn't make any sense. And I think this is an oversight and it should be resolvable.
Yeah, and I just wonder, has any other place in Donegal or around the country been affected? Mm.
I don't think there's going to be many cases where a building is literally on. You know, we've covered lots of this stuff and you can see logic sometimes as there's always one extra house that you can't get to or, you know, distance between a property and a pole, but it must run past you.
Manhole covers just outside the door, just beside the telegraph pole.
And so what else is in that building, Oliver?
There's 8 offices from where I can think of.
And these are all in the same boat? You're all in the same boat, no pun intended.
All in the same boat.
Okay.
Yeah. But came in here downstairs from me here. And there's like loads of classes and different events going on regularly here, like, you know. So there's a lot of people in the night. And it's also got a GTEC hot seat hub.
Yeah.
So like that's there as well.
And
like,
in terms of landline broadband, I might have missed this just a little earlier on, Oliver, because ironically we're having our own streaming issues here and I glanced over at them. Are you getting any up or down at the moment in using traditional broadband or is it all mobile broadband you're using?
Well, it's just traditional landline broadband I'm using. Sometimes the actual using the hotspot on your mobile phone is actually better.
Yeah.
But in terms of one, you need a stable, sometimes a stable connection.
100%. Yeah.
So you want to be using the landline. So like, you know, yesterday the speeds were what? Download speeds were like 9.3 and upload speeds were like 8 point something.
Okay.
Yeah, this morning when I came in, it was at 7 o'clock, it was 11.4 download speed and 11.3 upload speed. And then just before 9 o'clock there, it dropped to 9.36 11. So it's on, once people start coming in, it starts.
100%. Okay. Well, listen, leave it with us. I suspect, I think it was AIR that I don't think, I think Downing's and Carrigart was part of the area that was originally on the National Broadband Plan, but then was taken over by AIR. Because they cherry picked, the areas, if you know what I mean. So, but either way, one more way or other, we'll try and get an answer to it and get some explanation. I know you guys pursue it yourself, but listen, the more of us that are asking these questions, the better chance we have a resolution, Oliver.
Yeah, that's true, and the more people who's, as you say, the more people who's involved and asking questions, the quicker people react.
That's precisely it. The Fishing Daily, tell us a little bit about your publication.
We do online commercial fishing news for the fishing, Irish fishing industry and UK fishing industry. But we've sort of expanded over the past while because we found that we had a good market in Europe.
Okay.
So we have readers from Iceland, Norway, Spain, and everywhere. So constantly been adding little bits onto where we get our news from.
Mm.
So it's
sounds good. It sounds growing. Like an organic growth that you found audiences are finding you, and then you can tailor your product more to that expanding audience. It sounds great. Okay, Listen, Oliver. Obviously, we'll be in touch if there's any advance. Thanks very much for that. Take care, Oliver McBride, there, managing editor of the Fishing Daily. They're right smack bang in the middle of Downing's, which does have fiber broadband and fiber broadband going from Downing's Carrigart out into the surrounding areas, really quite successfully. But they seem to be right on the line of it and have been told that they can't access it, which makes no sense. And it's a busy office that Oliver is in there. Okay. And on the face of it, maybe, you know, 10 years ago, 9 down and 7 up might have seemed middling, but in this day and age, especially if you're working in the media or anything that requires an up and download speed of a bit of certainty, that's no good at all. We're joined in studio now by Amir Gamil of the Letterkenny Islamic Association. Thanks so much for calling up and having a chat with us, Amir.
Thanks very much for having me, Greg. Really appreciate it.
Planning permission has been fully granted now for the construction of an Islamic cultural centre at Lisnennan in Letterkenny. Talk to me about the plans.
Yeah, so it's Amir Gamil, by the way. But
sorry, what did I say?
No, or Gamil, but that's okay. It's common, no problem. No worries.
Understood.
Anyway, that's cool. Thank you very much. Thank you. So yeah, so we have a plan, some plans there for a community center. So it's going to be like an Islamic cultural and community center. It's something that, you know, we've sorely needed, really, because you know, although the center that we have at the moment, we're operating a center on the High Road, it's been great to have it, and we're very grateful that we have it, but it's not meeting all the needs of the community, and so, you know, this is just something that we're looking to do to meet the needs of the community. And it's worth saying as well, not just the needs of, you know, the Muslim community here, but, you know, it's also intending to be like a community hub. You know, it'll be like somewhere for really the whole community, you know, of Letterkenny. There'll be, you know, opportunities there for you know, interfaith dialogue for, you know, sports activities where, you know, we'd expect, you know, people of, you know, all faiths and no faith to get together and, like, you know, take part in sports activities there. We're already, you know, doing some community activities. We have a mother and toddler group that runs in our current center, Tiny Roots, and it's running very well. And the people that attend that are a combination of Muslims, but also people of other faiths and no faith get there, as you know, get together there. They bring their children and, you know, socialize and all that stuff. So it's, yes, it would be, you know, a continuation of that kind of stuff.
So the plans include a main building, ground floor and first floor mezzanine, prayer hall areas, male and female. Are they separate, are they?
Well, yes and no. So we have like the male prayer hall on the ground level, and then we have the female prayer area for the privacy of the females, mainly for the privacy of the ladies.
That's normal, is it?
That's normal. It's normal
within the faith.
It is
A coffee dock, sandwich bar area, offices, a meeting room, kitchenette, that type of stuff. So the plans, the plans have been approved. Planning has been approved.
Thank God.
In terms of funding, is the money there to begin the construction?
Well, no, not yet. We believe that God will provide.
He's going to need a little bit of assistance.
Well,
right?
we have to do our part. We have to do our part. You know, so God requires us. We believe that God requires us to do our part, and then if we make the efforts, then please God, He'll give us what we need.
How do you think Israel will go about doing that fundraising within the community?
Yeah.
Seek funding from the state. I don't know what way. Do you plan on doing that, if you've decided yet?
I don't think state funding is really possible for this kind of construction, but community funding. So we'll be looking to, you know, mainly raise funds from within the Muslim community, obviously within here, Letterkenny in County Donegal, and, you know, other parts of Ireland as well. Anybody who, you know, generally people tend to want to, you know, take part in this kind of project and be generous. Yeah.
Do we know the size of the sort of Muslim population in Letterkenny now?
Well, I think the last census had the Muslim population of Donegal at like 800 and something, along those lines. It's been a few years since, so it's grown a little bit since, I'm sure. But, you know, like with the Muslim population growing, as you know, we do need a center that would meet our needs. And as I say, it's not just for, it's not just going to be just for Muslims anyway, like, you know.
No, I understand that, but, and it's grand, it's okay to be a Muslim, you don't have to be defensive.
No, I'm not being defensive. I'm just making it clear that, it's going to be a place for everyone,
A lot of the narrative is that, and it's not unique to Donegal, but it's across the country, that, you know, there are people of different religions, different cultures coming into Ireland to take over effectively, that there's a plantation that, you know, will be a Muslim country in a generation. You know, the kind of stuff that you hear. But by your figures, the Muslim community is actually really quite small in Donegal. It represents less than 1%. Even if it were 1,600, that still would be 1%. So the Muslim community in this county is quite small.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of sensationalist nonsense, right, that's out there. People sort of, you know, beating the drum and all that kind of stuff. I think most people can see through that kind of nonsense. But yeah, it's just not true. As you say, the population is small. Of course, yeah, we're proud to be Muslim. Nothing, we're not being defensive about being Muslim or anything. But yeah, the population is small, and there's certainly no plantation going on. And yeah, I think this kind of stuff is just people looking to be divisive and just trying to sort of divide the communities and cause those kind of issues. I think, you know, Donegal and Ireland in general has been beautiful in the way people have had like really good community relations, and we've been happy. You know, Muslims have been here for over 30, even over 40 years, and we've been living in harmony without issue in that time. We don't want to see the kind of problems that you see over in England. And you get the feeling that some of these things are being imported. And really, when I say imported, I mean actually that people are actively importing these kind of things, you know.
Just to tease out what you're saying there, you're saying that there is already evidence and proof that the Muslim community, Christian community, non-religious community is integrating and has for generations in this country.
Absolutely.
And now you're saying this sort of rhetoric that we're hearing about the cultures being incompatible, etc. It's proven that they are, but this is just a line, a narrative that we that's being imported into this country from the likes of Britain.
Yeah, that's what that's how it looks to us, you know. I think like that kind of narrative that, you know, there's like a clash of civilizations and all that kind of stuff. That's just like nonsense that's being imported. I mean, like we were saying, we're you know, we've been here for, you know, as Muslim community here 30, 40 years. We're a big part of this community. You know, you have a large percentage of the workforce in the hospital. You know, that I think like it's like a huge number of,
well, 50%
of Muslim doctors
are from outside of Ireland, and I would imagine a large portion of those would be of the Muslim faith.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you walk through the hospital now, I mean, whenever I go through the hospital anytime, I'm, you know, seeing people I know all the time. You have a large Muslim population working in the hospital and contributing to that, the success of that hospital. The hospital actually being able to function without the Muslim population there, it couldn't function. Mm. And that's not unreasonable to say that. And then also, in addition to, you know, the Muslim population in the hospital, you've got like, you know, engineers, pharmacists, solicitors, business owners. We're all part of the community and contributing towards the community. We have volunteers, you know, people who are doing volunteer effort. Like I said, we have the mother and toddler group and stuff like that. So we have, you know, we're a big part and an important part of this community. You know?
And just in relation to that, and look, at I come at things incredibly open-minded and try and see things for myself, genuinely for myself. You know, like, if the truth be told, that we already are very well integrated, certainly in terms of school, work, you know, healthcare, all different types of industries, because there are many Christian people and Muslim people sitting around the same desks today.
Yeah.
And then I suppose then when you hear sort of someone trying to describe that this is something new and that it won't work, if you take a step back, you know, you have to say, well, it's kind of already happening, if you know what I mean, in terms of of integration and what have you, to a great extent.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like, the way that some people talk about it is if we just sort of, we just turned up yesterday, you know, but like, we've been around for ages. I mean, you know, like, you know, we're the current center that we're in now, right, on the high road. It's called the Eis ibn Maryam Islamic Center. So, you know, that's Eis ibn Maryam. It's like Jesus, the son of Mary, you know. We decided to name it that for a number of reasons. I mean, Jesus, for those who don't know, peace be upon him, is like a prophet in Islam, and he's like one of the most highly regarded and most important prophets in Islam. So we thought it would be good to name it that, so that people would understand the commonality, because a lot of people don't even understand the commonality between, you know, Christianity and Islam. And so, we're all about that, you know, that interfaith and, you know, so having those good community relations. So
I want to get to how things will work. I'm going to hold you because I'm going to take a break, but I want to ask you, you live your life how you live your life. I don't really have a great insight into how you do, but I'm sure there are differences as to how a Muslim person might live their life compared to how a Christian person might.
Very similarly.
Okay, well, this is the question I'm going to ask you.
Eat, drink, work, you know.
Yeah.
have family lives.
But that's, I mean, obviously, you know, then there are people who the same in Christianity, that follow the rules of the church more closely, right?
Yeah.
But, like, when you... You've lived here for a long time, but if someone moves here and they're of a Muslim background, do they have an opinion on how Irish people live their lives, how Christians live their lives, how people dress, how people carry themselves? You know, is there an opinion within the broad church that is the Muslim community on that?
Not really. I think people just sort of like live and let live, you know. So everybody kind of is concentrating on themselves. We're looking, you know, we focus on trying to be the best versions of ourselves as much as we can. We all are imperfect. You know, perfection is for God alone. So, you know, we're all just trying our best. And so really put people just focusing on themselves, focusing on trying to be the best Muslim that they can be. And that means trying to be the best person they can be, you know, trying in terms of, you know, worshiping God. We believe in, like, you know, praying five times a day, and then everything we do, we believe is worship if you're doing it with the right intention. So if you're, you know, working and your intention is good, and you believe that, you know, you're working to try to, you know, you're trying to raise, you know, awareness on things. You're helping to provide for your family. Mm-hmm. You're helping the community. And if you're doing that for the right reasons with the right intention, then, you know, that can be worship. And so, and then in terms of, yeah, and so everybody just kind of focusing on themselves, really. So okay. I don't think, you know, what you mentioned there is really
There's a lot of positivity coming in as well, and some other questions. I'm going to take a break. You're okay to stay with me just till 10, yeah, Amir? Okay,
sure.
We'll be back with more from Amir Gamil after we take this break. So Amir, a few people asking if the mosque will be doing the morning call for prayer. And that's not something I'm terribly familiar with. But anyway, that's the question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's probably just worth mentioning that this is not like just like a mosque. It's a community center.
Of
yes,
course,
yes,
yeah.
You know, there will be prayers going on there, of course. You know, we're planning to run the five daily prayers as we do in our current center, and Friday prayers and stuff like that. Yeah, there's no plans at the moment to have the call to prayer being audible from outside of the center. We don't have any plans for that right now. We're very conscious of, you know, making sure that while we have a place for the Muslim community and the wider community as well, we don't want to cause any issues for our neighbours.
No, and I think that was in the planning as well. Noise mitigation measures shall include identification and agreement of noise-sensitive locations and advance notice of significant noise generation activities to noise-sensitive locations. Now, that's not a direct reference to the call for prayer, but no, it falls under that as part of the planning, if I'm correct. I believe so.
I would say so, yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay. Great news on the approval to proceed with the Islamic Centre in Letterkenny. Such a great community and such a great addition to the town. I've joined them after a day-long fast for Ramadan on a number of occasions, and there's such a welcoming atmosphere and fantastic food. It's great for this community to have a place to call their own. That's from Chris. Greg, congratulations to Amir and everyone in the Letterkenny Islamic Association. The new cultural centre is a wonderful and much-needed addition to the Letterkenny community. I hope it'll become a space where people feel safe, welcome and connected. Great to hear Mr. Gamil and to get airtime for such an important part of our community. Thank you, Highland Radio, for highlighting this. Wonderful to have support for this community. So there is a lot of positivity coming in. I don't know if you expected otherwise, but anyway, there's been a lot of debate there. Do you have, in terms of people coming into this county, do you know, through iPass centres or what have you as they wait, do you have a role in engaging with them? I presume some of them are from the Muslim community as well. Does that form part of the community's work?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, everything that we're doing is on a volunteer basis. But obviously there are people coming in as refugees or seeking asylum, etc. And we do help people where we can. Probably worth mentioning, by the way, I know that there's some concerns around that kind of thing in terms of, like, you know, immigration and stuff. We're, of course, in support of legal immigration, but of course we are against illegal immigration because, you know, anything that's illegal is not correct. So
there is a presumption that... I've tried to reference this as carefully as I can in the past. I've spoke to people who came to this country 10, 15 years ago, even more recently, and they do have concerns about immigration policy. You know, they want a fair immigration setup, but they also recognise they're using the same services that could be under pressure or overburdened. Do you know what I mean? There's this presumption that everyone who isn't an Irish and white, if I could put it like that, there is pro open borders.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, I think we're of the opinion, of the reasonable opinion that immigration needs to be done properly and needs to be controlled. And we'd like to see, we understand that the government is under pressure with regards to things like immigration, but at the same time, we'd like to see them manage it a little better and to help with, you know, community relations and integration and stuff like that. But I think, again, going back to what we were saying earlier, A lot of this is people beating the drum and trying to be divisive. You know, there's a lot of misinformation being spread about even about our centre.
It's really important people engage with whatever concerns them and make up their own mind.
Absolutely,
I think, you know, because.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. Everybody needs to make up their own mind. But I think the problem, part of the problem, is that you have a lot of people putting in misinformation out there.
Yeah, but find out your own information is what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's important to find out your own information. Maybe your conclusion will be the same, or most likely it will be different. Because I think sometimes, and I don't want to sound all, you know, woke and all that kind of stuff, the usual stuff people might put at you, but a lot of people need to realise that you are probably working with and integrating. I don't talk to anyone about my religion. It's just not something what I do. Mm-hmm. But I probably engage with people all the time, and I'm sure I do, of different faiths and none. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's already happening. The big bad wolf is not the big bad wolf. It's your work colleague. Do you know that sort of
absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely.
I mean, or your doctor or your consultant,
as
or
you say,
your IT specialist.
This is
or
it. This is it.
Your labourer.
This is it. Like, you know, people go in to the hospital. There's a massive chance they're going to be treated by a Muslim doctor, and you know, they'll take the treatment and hopefully get better. And if, you know, as we said, if those Muslims weren't there, they wouldn't get that treatment. And whenever you hear people talking about, you know, Dr. So-and-so, or say the business owner, they go into like a takeaway or something like that, and they say, oh, this person's so sound. They're you know, I get on the best with them. They're such lovely people and all that kind of stuff. That's what you hear from people. And so on a personal level, you hear those kind of things. But then, as I said, you have people beating the drum. And I think there's a responsibility as well for everybody to make sure, as you said, to digest information and make up their own minds. But there's also, I think, a responsibility for the media to call out nonsense when there is nonsense, you know. I mean, just to give you some examples, you know, like there's people that, you know, were spreading some misinformation about our center, about why we chose the site that we chose and all that kind of stuff. And it's just nonsense, you know.
But I can't go chasing around. I can't, firstly, that information wasn't platformed here. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I can't go chasing around whatever Tom, Dick and Harry says on social media and disproving
absolutely.
It either.
No, know? That's not your responsibility. Yeah. But I suppose...
But I am the media, you see. That's the point I was making.
No. I know that's not your responsibility. But what I'm saying, I suppose, is that, like, you know, some people may get like a platform and they sort of start, you know, spouting nonsense. So we just have to be careful of that.
Yeah,
I think
for sure. So let's talk then about how quickly you hope these plans will progress now, because as you say, you know, the fundraising and what have you is, I presume, it's already up and running and ongoing. Have you allowed yourselves to sort of think of a timeline in relation to this?
We don't know how long it'll take. Obviously, you know, we need to finalize the paperwork just around after, you know, having gotten the planning awarded. We're very grateful, thank God, that it did get awarded. In terms of like a timeline for construction, you know, we've no idea. You know, it's very difficult to know. A lot of it depends on being able to raise the funds and, you know, a lot of other things. And like, as I say, we're really just doing it on a volunteer basis. You know, we're not experts in it either. So yeah, we're just kind of, you know, taking it as it comes.
It's going to be an interesting journey, I think.
It will be.
Challenging, but interesting.
It will be. But we're very grateful that it's happened. You know, it's going to be great to have a center where the true message of moderate Islam is taught to children and adults alike. You know, we always believe in protecting children and adults from being radicalized, and that's the best way to do that is through education. So it'll be a great place for that kind of thing. And then, as we said, as a community hub for people to integrate even further and to have those positive community relations that we were talking about.
Yeah, indeed. And as you say, the idea is that whilst, of course, this is Letterkenny Islamic Association Centre, it is a cultural centre in Lesson and Letterkenny. It's with the aim of, you know, being for the wider community.
Absolutely. I mean, we're big believers in being part of the wider community. You know, we've done some work in the past with raising funds for the local food bank. Because that's, you know, the people in the food bank, they do an absolutely amazing job. It's sad that there even has to be a food bank at all. But, you know, but there is one because there needs to be one. And the people there do great work. And, you know, we supported them by raising funds for them in the past. And we'll continue to do things like that in the future as well. So, yeah, we're a big part of this community. And we love, you know, being here. Donegal is a great place to be. And we, you know, believe very much in doing positive contributions for the community. We have done in the past and we'll continue to do so.
Okay, listen, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for calling up. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me. And the best of luck with everything.
Thanks very much, Greg.
All right,
that is
Amir Gamil, who is of the Letterkenny Islamic Association, just talking of the news that has been welcomed today by Amir, of course, that planning permission has been granted now for the construction of an Islamic cultural centre at Liscannon in Letterkenny. It is the 9 till noon show. We'll be back with much more after the news.